Hello and welcome back to a new season of Linux Lads, season seven, episode one. As always, I'm joined by Mike and Connor. Say hello, chaps.
Hello.
Hello.
And we're also joined by Amolith.
Hello.
Who has been on the show before. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
So he's here to add a little bit of authenticity to the podcast. I hope you all had a lovely Christmas. We certainly did, I guess.
Our festive period, whatever you guys celebrate yourself.
Yeah, exactly. Winter festival.
Hope you had a happy festivals.
We've not been like great with like news this episode, so we're just going to talk about whatever. Oh yeah, by the way, I run Arch.
Do you run Arch or do you run Manjaro?
Manjaro.
I am very, very particular about it. Not because I care if you how you install the damn thing, because don't give a shit about that, but because Manjaro put a lot of effort in there. And I keep telling people, off, you don't run Arch, you run Manjaro, because if you say I run Arch, you're kind of denying the work that they put into it as a team. And it kind of bothers me, because you don't install Arch and I don't install Arch just exactly because it's a fucking hard work. And it's there's no point, because somebody already did that and put it together in a way that makes a lot of sense. Mm. And I that's why I always wag my finger, clutch my pearls, and think of the poor developers, because you know it is Manjaro is very well put together, and it needs to be celebrated.
Well, we don't have please a way, think of the developers.
Exactly. We don't have a way of doing that smartly, like, unless you want to be a real stallman about it and say that you installed Manjaro/Arch/GNU/systemd/Linux, right? We don't want to do that, but like at least the last one in the chain. And if you say Manjaro, everybody knows that it's based on Arch. So, you know.
Yeah.
At least anyone in this community. I've a lot of time for Manjaro. I've run it for a long time. Not currently running it, but that's no particular slight against Manjaro. Who knows, next week I could be back on Manjaro, so it's nothing against Manjaro. I'm currently on Endeavor OS just to see what being more close to upstream Arch is like. Who knows, it's an experiment. May stick with it, may not. May go back to Manjaro. So again, so it's not a negative slight against Manjaro, is just different philosophies on how recent the packages should come. With Endeavor OS, it's bleeding edge. There's barely a day goes by. I mean, at least once a day, the you have updates thing pops up. At least once a day, and you can configure it to be more often than that if you want. Literally, as the updates come, you get the update, whereas Manjaro is the more curated, going, okay, all of these updates have happened in the past week. We're going to make sure that all of them work, they don't break your system. Then we will push an update, and you'll see the pop-up coming up on your thing. Is it a week or 2 weeks or something like that? But it's a period of time to add in that extra layer of stability. Yeah, it's just different philosophies.
I've noticed in Manjaro that the package I'm looking for in the software center, which is actually really good, it's basic, but it's good. Yeah, I'd be looking for a program, and I would see the official, and it does a really handy thing where it tells you right there in the listing whether it's Snap Flatpak or official repositories, which is not a lot of things do, so surprisingly, and it also has the version number right there. So you can see that, like, normally the one in the official repositories will be the latest version, like even compared to the Snap or the Flatpak, which I wasn't expecting at all. You know, you notice that quite often. So, you know, even though in Manjaro hold the updates back a little bit longer, they're still pretty damn up to date.
You could be on Manjaro and you could make the conscious decision of saying, no, I want to be on Bleeding Edge, because you can add in the AUR and you can see that there's Git packages, literally
so
as the person publishes the project leader or the project maintainer pushes something out on Git, you're literally getting that package straight in, so there's no middleman between you and the developer.
Yeah, I was on Endeavor OS for the last few months on my work laptop and had to reinstall. Well, I decided to reinstall because after an update, my Wi-Fi stopped working, and it turns out that if you are installing your Wi-Fi driver from an AUR package that has got even Dashgit there, then you probably shouldn't do that. Because that's the one, that's the network is the one that you can't easily fix without network access. So, yeah, no, I went back to Fedora from that. It's not nothing against Endeavor. It's basically this driver has to be reinstalled every time a new kernel update comes. Actually, it now doesn't because the driver is included in the kernel, but there's some complications and the patient died. So
I could just imagine myself being in that scenario is going, so there's an updated driver that's coming from this Git package. Install. Oh, crap, now I don't have Wi-Fi anymore.
Yeah, you like, luckily I have an Ethernet cable around and everything, but it's not ideal. So, yeah, I went to Fedora since that because that kind of works.
What are you running on your primary rig, Amoleth?
Arch. Regular Arch.
Oh, nice.
Oh, okay. Classic Arch.
On both my main desktop and my laptop.
And here's the real kicker question. What desktop environment? You're really going to split the community here.
i3. A window manager.
Oh.
Oh, okay.
Ooh, nice.
A man of culture and taste, I see.
Yeah, I'm a man after Mike's heart.
Yeah, it's very good. I don't have the time for it because I want my things to work out of the box. But I've tried it before when I had a bit more time. And it's really nice.
I think you were on Manjaro i3 version for a while, weren't you?
I was, yes. And it was brilliant. It was beautiful. You know, the black and green theme with gaps. It's actually a thing in i3. Gaps properly configured and everything. Like, you actually installed it and out of the box, it just looked like a million euros. And it was... it's the only reason why I don't use it is that I just want the proper GUI controls on my you know, sound, and I want somebody in my old age to basically just give me the operating system as the distribution put together, test it, and so on. You know, like basically that the way Ubuntu does it or Fedora do it, the with a big org behind that, because I kind of rely on this on my work, and I can't now. I don't have the time with my studies and all to spend debugging things and reinstalling and things. And I'm not saying that that would be the case with i3, but it's just the extra bit of work that I'm almost 40 now and I'm not willing to go anymore.
Yeah.
And it turns out that Linux works fine if you change the paradigm and went from, I want to distro hop every week and I want to compile my things from source and I want to use the AUR for my everything from the kernel up, and I want to do this and that and try every new thing. And if you want to switch from that and just say, well, just package for me as if it was a product and just deliver, and I'm just gonna use it like you say I would, and do you end up being the distro maintainers, it works fine. It's I'd imagine, you know, I've had some dalliances with Windows this week because I had to do something for work, some research. And I was losing my will to live, literally, because it just doesn't work for me. And but if I compare it, if I try it, it's not possible to compare it objectively. But if I try, for my specific use case, I could use either, you know, Windows, Linux, or the Mac, and it would. I can't see any level of polish that the proprietary systems would add to me, except for the one big thing that I can go to PC world and buy a Mac or a Windows computer straight out of the box. I can't do that with Linux there.
Slight segue, but what do you guys think of the screenshots of, what is it, Cosmic by PopOS, the new DE that they're working on?
From my point of view, it's good that they seem to mean it might perform better than GNOME. I believe they're trying to have a Raspberry Pi version of Pop OS as well, so it might run meaner. there's certain things that I probably don't like about GNOME in the back end, not just from the UI point of view, like the fact that GNOME is single process. Like, it's a golden opportunity. They would literally have shot themselves in the foot if they haven't addressed that, saying, okay, we're going to start from scratch. I know we're going to start it with single process. So I imagine that they'll have fixed that and there'll be multi-process from the very get-go. I mean, what's the point in writing your own from scratch if you don't include those little niceties? From a UI point of view, I just don't particularly like the flow, but that's down to personal preference. But it's good, it's cool, it's like exciting, and they, I mean, like with anything, if it's a relatively large organization that is like they're self-sustaining, obviously they're selling their computers, that is, so they're self-sustaining from that point of view, and if they can afford to pay the developers, it's free and open source software, so any improvements that they make or any forks that they make could be useful to somebody else in the community and say, we're going to take the same base as Cosmic, but we're going to fork it ourselves. This is all in theory. Fork it ourselves and then change the UI so that we have a different desktop environment, but it's just based upon on all of the work that the System 76 guys have done. And that is a theoretical thing in the future. But yeah, it's all good. I mean,
If it works out, like if it's as good as they say it's going to be, like I'd definitely use it. And I would love to see if, obviously it's, I'm pretty sure it's going to be open source, but like why wouldn't it? So yeah, I'm just excited to see a new DE base coming along, you know. Like you said, like I just can't wait to see all the other projects that are based on top of it, because I really like the look of Pop OS. Like, I really enjoyed Pop OS because they have a lot of cool, like it's a very opinionated desktop experience, but it's kind of opinionated in the right way. It's like they definitely have a certain way of using it, and they expect you to use it that way. But you can switch between tiling mode and not tiling mode and stuff. So you have that little option there. And they do have some neat little keyboard shortcuts on the desktop, you know. But the reason I stopped using it was it just got so fucking buggy sometimes. It just wasn't that stable. And especially the Pop Shop, which is just an absolute piece of shit. Like, I'm sorry, but it's just, like, I don't think I used it. Like, up until I stopped using Pop OS, I think every single time I opened Pop Shop, it either crashed or froze.
Oh, that's
like every single time for like 5 or 6 weeks, and I was like, "This is just not good." Like, I'm fine with installing stuff on the command line, but I don't always know the exact name of the package, so that's why I use the GUI software centers.
You want GUI software center for discoverability, even if you just want to go and browse, like do window shopping. Mm. That's what it is for.
If I was in that situation where the default one, I believe theirs is based off the same one as Elementary OS. So their app store, and I think they share the same code. Like, I think it's just lightly customized version of the Elementary store. If it was that buggy, I would install GNOME software. I mean, GNOME software is actually pretty good as well, so at least I would have the option of both.
The one in KDE is pretty good. It doesn't have a specific name here. It just calls it Add Remove Software, but I'm guessing it's...
Oh, that's PAMAC. If it's
yeah, I'm guessing it's just PAMAC, yeah.
I think that, yeah, that comes with Manjaro. That doesn't come with normally with KDE, because the KDE discovery is very distinct. It used to be a hot mess. It's gotten much, much better.
I actually didn't like Discover that much, no. So I'm kind of glad they have, Manjaro has its own thing.
It's improved a lot, but from a very low base.
Put it this way, in the past, when I've encountered KDE Discover, I've installed GNOME software on KDE because GNOME software was so superior to KDE Discover. But I agree with you, PAMAC is very good. It's not installed by default in Endeavor OS. So all of these beginning with E are really confusing for me. But the Endeavor OS, which I'm on, is not installed by default, but of course it's in the packages. So I installed it via the command line. And then that's the way I I interact with it because PAMAC is actually a really good software. How do you describe it? Probably a repo manager is probably the easiest way to describe it. A graphical repo manager for Arch. So anything that I'm on something on Arch based, I install PAMAC because it's in the. Don't think it's in the default repos, but it's definitely in the AUR.
And what if do you use a GUI on your i3 screen? Do you use GUI or do you just go to Bacour or Yai? Or
he's shaking his head in disgust.
And how do you install AUR packages?
Just command line with an AUR helper.
Which one? That's the win. Which one? Yay or
I don't know how you pronounce it. I think it's like Paru, P-A-R-U. Oh, it's written in Rust and pretty nice.
Cue the music again.
So many people have tried to explain to me why Rust is better. This is like a meme in my life at this point. Rust has, so many people have said Rust is great because, and then explained why, and 10 minutes later I still don't understand why.
The amount of, so I'm not a developer by any stretch of the imagination, but I do a lot of Python, and I do every now and then try to learn Rust, and I created software in Rust, right? You make something in, at least for me personally, I make something in Python, and the feeling is, okay, it works fine, it's done fast, now I can work with it and do the data. You make something in Rust, and you have got the sense of achievement of, I really managed to do this thing, so it is done properly, everything is nice and tidy, and you know exactly, like, it's the feeling of having done something correctly, as it should be.
Yeah, and I hear the compiler is absolutely dope.
if you develop something in Python and or Java or something like this, and you just read the default stack trace, like you do something wrong in there, yeah, and it will spill out a bunch of text telling you, it's not the compiler obviously in Python, it's the interpreter, it tells you somewhere, it basically gives you a long stack trace and tells you somewhere in there is something that you fucked up, right? If with Rust, it tells you this thing that you did here, and it points a little arrow, is wrong.
Yeah.
Maybe you could consider doing the other thing here, right? And it's not always super, it doesn't always give you the light bulb. Oh, yeah, sure. You know it's a problem, and you have to go and look it up in the documentation. Like, if you are not a Rust dev, obviously a Rust dev would know. But, like, it is, and it's faster. Like, I can tell you, the amount of data that if you put a Python program with, even with Pandas, and Rust program processing the same amount of textual data together, like it smokes, obviously, it's for obvious reasons. Rust smokes Python, you know, it's like a tortoise racing against BMW, right? It's just not happening, but like many reasons, and also people probably, it's nice if you come from like C-like languages that you don't have to worry about memory management that much.
My understanding of it, and this is completely and utterly coming from a point of view of not a developer at all, I don't interact with code in literally years. So to put it that way, it's not in my day-to-day job, it's not in my hobbies or anything like that. So take this with a large bag of salt, is that it incorporates some of the features of C and C++, i.e. the speed and that level, but also makes it a bit more user-friendly to make it easier for people who like Python or Java or anything like that. So it's kind of a halfway house in between the two, is the way it was explained to me. And again, with all the caveats of I'm not a developer, yada, yada, yada.
It's just a kind of a more modern take on a low-level programming language.
On system programming, yeah. And it's harder to make memory leaks. And even as a user, that's exactly what you want. You don't want memory leaks on your system.
Yeah, someone explained that to me. They said with the compiler, they said with C or Java or anything, you can compile the thing and it will still have errors when you run it. But they said with Rust, that's really difficult to do because the compiler literally does not let you compile it unless it's perfect.
Yeah. The Mozilla or whoever at Mozilla originally figured it out, right? They came up with things. So if you want to learn Rust,
Learn Lost.
Then you are in for a treat because you have to, there's a things that you have to learn up front, otherwise you won't be able to work with it. Like you, it's a constrained environment. You know, like JavaScript and Python are always like, sit down, here's a few things that you need to learn and then start working. And you get very creative very, very fast, right? With Rust, you need to learn the constraints of the environment that are there exactly for this reason, so that you don't do something stupid with it, right? Whereas Python just lets you do anything. JavaScript lets you do absolutely anything as far as I have experience with it. Maybe there are ways of limiting it, but it's a fight between constraining between constraining the developer and between making them productive fast, right? It's, yeah.
Amelis, have you had any interaction with, like, if you were to code something, what would you have any go-to language that you'd use, or would you code a lot, or would you just do something like, I need to do something real quick, I'll just do it in Python or something?
Hold on, don't say it. Assembly.
No. Resoundingly not assembly. We had to do that in university a couple semesters ago, and it's
a pain in the ass.
I don't
ass,
like
yeah.
assembly.
Yeah.
I would do it in Go, because that's really the first language I have a ton of experience with. We did a couple semesters of Java in university, hated that. I've done a tiny bit of Python, but the bulk of my experience is in Go. And I really enjoy it. Even it's kind of the same as Rust in that it's very opinionated. With Python, you know, you have like 100 different ways to accomplish one task. In Go, there's like one or two best ways. So if you have a problem you want to solve, you can look it up and there's the answer. It's very developer friendly and opinionated, and I like that a lot.
We shouldn't come across as we are as shitting on Python or any other languages. Like Python is great and I love it, and it the problem with it is that it comes with history of 20 or 30, I don't remember how long, so it's been around for decades, and it shows. Whereas all these newfangled languages like Rust and Go, they are building on the top of that experience, knowing what to avoid, and can go straight from zero to this new paradigm. Whereas you can write very safe code in Python, and most people, like most developers, obviously do. But you can also do something really stupid like I do every day.
Python definitely has its place, and we use it every day in work. But personally, I just prefer Go. Yeah.
I'm sure everyone who's listening to this podcast is already aware of this fact, but just give you an idea of the, in terms of the history of things. C, the language C, was written by Dennis Ritchie and the same guy who's involved in Unix. So in the development of early development in Unix, not exclusively himself, he was with other people, but he was heavily involved in Unix, but also developed the C language. And when was that back in like the
75
70s or something?
Yeah. When the music that you lot like to listen to was created, that's when the C programming language also was created.
It really pisses me off when someone like Steve Jobs has like godlike messiah status, and Dennis Ritchie had more fucking ingenuity and like intelligence in his pinky than that fucker.
Around the same time, like, not, I don't think it was exactly the same day, but in around the same week or something like that, coincidentally, the Dennis Ritchie also passed away. It's like all of the headlines were Steve Jobs, Steve Jobs, Steve Jobs. We're like,
visionary who gave MP3s a paint job.
All right, okay. I don't, well, we know that I, everybody knows that I don't necessarily agree with your hatred for Steve Jobs, Shane, but yeah, sure. It's a sad truth that the people who do something really, really involved and really complicated, nobody knows about them. Even the celebrities of the scientific world, like who knows who Richard Feynman is? Or was, sorry. Who knows who Richard Feynman was? Everybody knows Galileo, because he's the one who made it through centuries. But there was plenty of people, especially in the Renaissance period, who do some really cool research, and we never learn about them. Same, that's the kind of sad truth. You know, we know the celebrities, the people usually who not only have or who don't either not only or necessarily not at all have a talent for doing something, but people who can talk to people, you know, people who have.
Remember that whole thing a few years ago, how it came about that everyone, it became common knowledge that Thomas Edison like ripped off half his ideas and like stole, he worked in the patent office. So he basically stole people's patented ideas. And that's why he's considered such a great inventor.
Well, but it's all bullshit. Intellectual property is bullshit anyway. Like, you don't invent anything. You work off the people who came before you. And it doesn't matter if you are Steve Jobs and basically repackage someone's ideas, or if you are, and I'm not going to say any names so that people don't send me hate mails, but if you are, even if you are a really good, talented creator of anything, you still didn't, you weren't born yesterday and your ideas didn't come from thin air. You have listened to other people, you watch them work, and then you create something of that experience and of their ideas. That's why it doesn't matter it shouldn't matter who created what, because we all did in a way. We all interact together, right? And we have, some of us are very well suited to create.
All throughout history, there's examples of that, either maliciously in the case of Watson and Crick, and it turns out that was it Rosman or whatever her name was. Turns out that she did like 90% of the work, and then the two guys just came in at the very end. And is it, they say that Alexander Graham Bell didn't actually invent the telephone. It was an Italian guy. And again, I probably should know the name, but I don't. But it was a guy with an Italian name. Yeah, there's all sorts of examples of that throughout history.
Well, that took a turn.
Hopefully next week I'm going to announce that there's a big, massive like upgrade to this podcast, and we're getting our own studio and everything, because I'm looking at the National Lottery site here, and I bought myself a lotto ticket.
What do you say that when you're getting our own studio? It was like, yeah, this is news to us too.
Yeah, because if I win a part of that 19 million jackpot, then I'm gonna splurge.
Oh, that's a sound business plan. That is.
I never ever do the lottery, but there's lottery fever in Ireland this week because it's like an unprecedented jackpot, and they've changed the rules so that someone has to win it so that it won't roll over to next week.
There's only what, 6 or 7 million? I should know this. How many people live in Ireland?
Just under 5 million now.
Really? No.
In the Republic, what you're confusing is the country of Ireland and the island of Ireland.
Really?
In the Republic, it's just under 5 million, with another 1.5 in the north.
Only
it's like 4.5 million, maybe, in the Republic.
All right, there's a lot of players, you know.
I think what that there was a cap, and I think a cap was set in the 80s or early 90s that it can't go above us. This is the National Lottery, not the Euro Millions.
The population.
The population, yes. They said that can only be.
There can only be 5 million people in the country, and that's it.
The jackpot can only get to a certain amount, and then it just rolls on to the next week, and then it rolls. And essentially, it's been rolling on for so long that they says, no, listen, it's not going to roll on anymore. If nobody won, no one individual wins this, then it's going to go down to the next tier down, and then it's going to split. So they say, this is the final one. Then it's
how, yeah, so you won't need like... You won't need like 7 numbers to win the jackpot now. You'll only need like 6 or 5, maybe.
19 million is their jackpot.
19 million.
I remember only a couple of days ago, I was watching something on YouTube, and it was, me as a car guy, I should know this off the top of my head, but it was one of the 1960s racing Ferraris that are worth ridiculous amounts of money. And not only that, it was Stirling Moss's car that was been driven around. And yeah, it's worth 35 million. So like, even if you won the 19 million jackpot, you'd be nowhere near to being able to afford this car.
I sound like a scroungy bastard when I say this, but if I got that 19 mil, I'd probably just still buy a second-hand car.
Why not?
Just, you know, for environmental reasons.
If you're not if you're not into cars, why would you bother with anything else?
And I've already got a car. I'll just put a spoiler on it or something. I don't know.
spinning the rims and you pimp it up.
My 13-year-old humble Hyundai is just fine.
Yes. if I won for 19 million, I'd get our Skoda gold plated. I think, Amolif, this won't tell you anything, but look up a Skoda Citigo. As an American, you will find it funny. You probably wouldn't call it a car.
Yeah, these are cool cars.
Yeah.
But
small cars are just easier to drive.
Tiny. Like, Americans have a category of car called compact, and then they have a category called subcompact. This is even smaller than your subcompact for anyone who's in the States.
Well, I've seen the size of cars in the States. Like, it's crazy. I don't everyone drives a tank over there.
I think the Ford Fiesta is classified as a subcompact. Yeah, this is smaller than the Ford Fiesta.
Yeah, that's one down. So this is in European measure. I think this is an A, and Ford Fiesta is a B class or something. I don't know.
Yeah, this is even one smaller than the Ford Fiesta.
If you go into a Ford factory and you see how they make F-150s, they take the motor of a Skoda Citigo and put it in and use it for the wiper controls.
I'm a little wanted to get in there.
I was going to say, my grandmother has a Ford Fiesta, but it's not small.
Yeah, I don't think Americans make small cars. Like,
do they have a different Ford Fiesta in the US than from here? Because here it's a smallish car.
No, I think I don't know if they discontinued it, but for a while they had this. No, they had the exact same one, and even had the hot hatch version, which was the ST.
They have a very bad reputation in here because it's what you drive when you are 17 years old and you just get a license and you decided you have to be the fastest bastard on the motorway.
Once it gets me from A to B, I don't care. I would drive a hot pink Mini.
I'd actually want a hot pink Mini, to be honest. You know, at least that's a car you walk out of and people look at you and say, that guy has style.
Yeah, that guy doesn't give a fuck, man.
Yeah, it's like, you know, they would expect they would have certain expectations as of who walks out of it, and they did see me and be like, color me surprised in hot pink. You know, it is a statement, but why not? But yeah, I'd rather I didn't have to have a car actually at all, because it's not a lot, but it is something you have to look after and stuff.
I'm going to be offensively stereotypical here and say, Amulet, with your long beard and your Czech shirt, I guarantee you're a pickup driver, are you?
Yes. No. I have a 90-something pickup truck. That was my grandfather's.
It's a hand-me-down, but yeah, I was right with the type of vehicle.
I was just going to say it's very convenient. I play double bass, which is a massive instrument, and carrying that around in a small car would not be easy. So with a pickup truck, I can throw it in the back, throw all my sound equipment in the back, and I'm good to go.
Is this single cab or double cab?
Single.
I just imagine you, you know, driving on some wooden, I actually don't know where you are in the States, it's fine, you don't have to reveal it, but I just imagine you like in some heavily wooded area, going with Johnny Cash blasting from the speakers, no seat belt, and instead of having like divided seats, you have got just this one big bench seat on there. Yeah,
that's pretty much it.
Yeah, that's pretty accurate. I live in Southeast US, and it's very rural.
Yeah, going down to your general store where you can buy your toilet paper and a gun in the same store.
That's actually not that weird. I visited a friend in the South, and yeah, we went to Walmart, and you can literally just go to Walmart and buy a fucking shotgun if you want, like. It's not that weird there.
My only experience of that was, and he did it for like he deliberately seeked out these stores. So I don't know how common they are, because obviously he was doing it for the documentary. But in for Bowling for Columbine,
oh yeah,
you know, he was getting his hair cut, and he's like, oh yeah, can I see the bullets over there? And like, as he was getting his hair cut, like the guy was like, oh yeah, sure. And so he's like looking at the bullets while he's getting his hair cut. So I imagine that he deliberately, like, they're probably driving around for a couple of hours and went, wait, that place sells guns and you can get your haircut? Okay, we're calling it there and we're filming that.
I think he even went into a bank, got a bank account, and they just gave him a gun as a thing. But I don't know, yeah, it's Michael Moore,
it was an
right?
ad in the newspaper, I think, is like, open up an account in this bank and we give you a free shotgun or something like that. Then he went in, signed up, and they said, don't you think it's a bit odd to be handing out a shotgun like in a bank? Obviously, they didn't give him the bullets with him. It was just literally just the shotgun.
Yeah, they're not hard to acquire, though. Again, you can get those at Walmart.
Bring your own bullets.
And but it's like, there was a few things a few shady editing tricks he used in that film, though. Apparently, like, I know the general message of the film, I agree with, like, too many guns, but like, he apparently, with that free, like, he got that free bank account, or sorry, he got that free gun with the bank account, but apparently he had to wait like 3 weeks before he got the gun. Like, he didn't just get it the same day, and they did do background checks and stuff.
Me too. I agree with what he says, but I think if you are saying something that important, you should be completely above board with everything. And I went from this, and this is me, I don't remember movies at all, like, but this is 20 years ago, I think, or ish. And I remember the feeling that I had in the cinema, thinking, yeah, well, I see what you're saying, but I don't trust you. And I didn't know who Michael Moore was.
He's not very objective. No, he is not.
Oh yeah, Bowling for Columbine was like early to mid 90s, so it was quite a while ago.
No, not really.
Yeah, I think Bowling for Columbine is old enough.
Oh, that's a super old movie. Yeah.
Yeah.
2002.
Yeah.
I was a bit off, but it's still quite old.
I was already in uni. Yeah. Well,
20 years on the button.
It's...
Oh, I feel so old.
I have never seen this movie.
And this is where Amelis is going to make us all feel bad and said, I wasn't even born.
No, I was. I was too just when it came out.
Ah, come on.
Jesus Christ, I'm almost like your age.
I think we're just going to call it a day there, folks. Tune in next week.
Quality Linux related conversation here.
I think to just circle back and revert and follow up on that, let's take this opportunity to introduce our brand new section, which is basically just the section we used to do before, but we're just bringing it back with a different name. Nifty Nuggets is what we went with. So Nifty Nuggets of wisdom or information. Is that a thing? Would you say nuggets of information?
Yeah.
Who knows?
Well, you know what? Calling it boners used to be so complications-free. It was just so obvious what you think about it. Now we have to complicate it by giving it a PG-friendly name. I know. I understand, but...
Yeah, I think that's why it zoned out, because I always just hated the name boners.
We're becoming more mature, and we're not going to call it boners anymore.
Speak for yourself.
It's a bit like the guys who used to do the Linux Voice podcast. They had that whole thing of where they had this great name, Finds of the Fortnite, but then they started a different podcast and they couldn't really steal the stuff from the old one. So even though it was all the same guys, and they were like, oh no, it's Discoveries of the Fortnite or something like that. I don't know.
that saga continues because Graham from that podcast is still on LNL, right? So that saga continues because on Late Night Linux they now started doing it too, and because Graham is there from the previous podcasts,
exactly. So I guess it's Graham's thing.
I don't know what they call it now. I forgot, but they did mention it. But nobody came up with a great name like Boners. And well.
But anyway, let's power through. And Mike, you put in the nifty nugget for this fortnight. So
the nifty nugget.
Read out the nifty nugget.
Well,
just remember that nifty nugget.
Yeah,
expect it next week. Expect it every week.
Yeah, nifty nuggets. My nifty nugget for this what week? Are we doing this weekly now? No.
No.
Didn't you say every week?
Every week that we do the podcast.
All right, okay. That's what I wanted to hear. My nifty nugget is DistroBox. I've been on about Toolbox, which is basically containers, Fedora, that kind of shit. But DistroBox takes it a step further. It's inspired by Toolbox. Basically what you do, you type in something into a command line terminal, and it will fetch an image. You enter the image, and it can be anything. So you are on Fedora, but you can run an image of Ubuntu or Arch or any kind of Linuxese kind of thing, right? And you can install an application. So if, say, you are on Fedora, but you can install within that DistroBox environment an application from the AUR. And it can be a GUI application, and you can export it. So once you get out of there, then you go and hit your super key. With your GNOME menu, the application is going to be there. So to recap, for example, you want something GUI that is only in the AUR, not in Fedora, but you are on Fedora. You use this DistroBox thing and install it through that, and it will appear in your menu and basically behave, in my limited testing, as if it was installed from Fedora. It is basically just another way of making sure that you can install applications generally without limitations of specific distros. And it's amazing. I really like this idea, not just because you can export a GUI application, but because also I was doing something before my Endeavor OS problems. I was doing something in Endeavor OS. I was doing something, and it came really handy as well. It's and if for developers is obvious, this is aimed at people who develop something and they want a clean environment that they can blow up or on immutable file system distros like Fedora, Silverblue. It's also extremely helpful because it provides you with access to the kind of, I don't know if it's Chroot or like basically containerized system part, system file system. So it's amazing. There will be a link in the show notes.
Maybe it's not the intended use, but could you use this with like, say, Windows? Could it be a way to get around not using a VM?
I don't think so, because this kind of relies on the kernel being there. I think maybe Amolef knows better about containerization, but I've never seen containerized Windows or containerized macOS in my opinion.
Would WSL, because doesn't that have a Linux kernel?
It's the other way, though. That's the other way. So what you can't install Windows in a Docker container, I think. So if you are on Linux and you want to fetch Windows...
Can you do this thing that is Linux related on Windows? That's how we...
Oh, is that what you asked, Shane? Is that what you asked? Were you interested in running...
No, I think I just misunderstood what it was for, but now I get it. Because the reason I say that is because recently I was checking in with the state of game engine clients on Linux. And I tried to install Unity on Unreal Engine. Unreal Engine took hours to install, and then it wouldn't even really work properly. So, and it was so slow. So I just ended up like, okay, that was 6 hours of my time that I had to compile it from source and everything. It was crazy. But they make it really easy, but it was still a long process. But and Unity 3D, fair that it was a little quicker, but it was really buggy. Like I couldn't really do anything. It was too buggy. And I logged an issue with them and everything, and it's still open, so I don't know. But but the thing is, but I was hoping to, what I'm getting at is that I wanted to maybe run a Windows VM just so I can, because I have an okay CPU and stuff, and it has virtualization and whatnot. So I thought maybe I could just run a Windows 11 VM or something and just do my game development stuff in there.
You could. So first, I was wrong. There are some container images from Windows. Not sure how good they are. They seem to have base on. They seem to be towards server stuff. I've never tried it. I've used VM Windows, and I had to switch for graphics stuff. Specifically, this was video creation. I had to switch to actually hardware, like bare metal installation, because the VM wasn't capable of running Adobe Premiere properly. It would just take ages. So if you have a graphics card that you can pass through straight to the VM, you might have a different experience.
Yeah, I think my computer supports that. Yeah, I can do all the pass-throughs and stuff.
That I can't do on the laptop. Even though it has got technically two graphics cards, because it's got the NVIDIA one and the Intel one, it doesn't work. I couldn't get it working properly. So if you can do that, maybe your mileage will vary. Windows 11, you can install it in... you can install Windows 11 in a VM. You need to do some registry hacking, but it's not much. It's simple. There's a Reddit somewhere post that. But basically, because it checks stuff that it shouldn't be checking in order to install. So, you can install it in a VM, and Windows 10 obviously you can. But
I just don't want to go back to dual booting. I feel like I failed if I have to go back to dual booting.
Well, yeah, I guess. Sometimes you just can't avoid it. If you need to do something that's only available on Windows, then like it's just that. That's just it.
I did see like a seamless mode you can do with VMs, which looks really cool. It's basically like you can have an app that's running inside a VM operating system. It's running on the guest operating system, but the actual app appears just on your within your window manager as if it's part of the system. It's kind of cool. I can't remember what it is that does that. I think it's VirtualBox.
It does it as well. But if you
no, want, VMware. VMware does that.
Yeah, but VMware is like 200 money, I think. Or at least 100.
Really? I got a free... Oh, yeah, I know what it was. I had an education edition of it, which was free. Yeah.
Oh, I should be able to get that. I'm a student. Yes.
Oh, yeah, seriously, get on that. All the education shit you can get is so cool. You can get so many things for free.
I'm doing that for IntelliJ all the time. I have all the IntelliJ suits because they support it. It's amazing.
In tangential game engine and Linux-related news, is something I discovered recently is the Sonic Colors Ultimate, which I think has been ported over to the Switch. I don't know if it's the Switch specific version or all versions of this game, but it was developed in Godot. So that there you are, a big like well known game is using the Godot engine. So
that's cool because I've yet to see, because Godot is definitely not an industry standard yet, and I was just testing the waters to see how you go about getting a job in game development, and it's like Unity or Unreal, basically. or just pure C# or C++ or something, but I'm not willing to do that.
You would want to be a dev. Aren't game devs like really overworked and stressed and hate their life and hate games, and their bosses are really...
Maybe, yeah.
I watched, I don't know.
But I'm
maybe
already stressed and I already hate my life, so.
All right, and then, yeah. there was a Hasan Minhaj's Patriot Act, which is kind of a comedy series. It was on Netflix or something. One of the episodes was on game dev, but it was very United States orientated, obviously.
He's not very funny, but he's all right.
I find him quite funny. I actually like him. He's a bit rambling, but, you know, all of us liberals are. I think he was, I don't remember the game studios. You know the ones that Rockstar, he was shitting on, I think, I don't want to name any names in case I get it wrong, and then I get lawyers here and stuff, so no. Can't accept lawyer into my house, I don't have a weapon.
But yeah, just in relation to, not game development, but in game like QA, I know several of my friends that I've known from in Canada, and they've done that job where I think there's a huge amount of the game industries over in Montreal. So I think they got a job and they moved from Vancouver over to Montreal. So they did game QA, and they say it's mind-numbing. Like, it's, you want to kill yourself at the end of the job. It's like, it's one of the worst jobs you can do, because apparently, like, there's different things. Like, one of, I'm not saying this is all they do, but one of the things that they would do would be like, okay, there's a wall in the game. We're going to run the character up to the wall to make sure that the character just doesn't run through the wall. I went, oh, but there might be a scenario that the character has a certain sword that they can only get when they complete the game. But then if they go back and then they, with the sword in their hand, they might run up to the wall and then that might pass them through the wall. So literally every combination of armor and of loadouts that the character could possibly have, and then they just run up to the wall to make sure that, oh, you never know that this shield and sword combo might cause them to somehow glitch through the wall. Yeah, that is that. That sounds like a really incredibly fun job.
Nope.
yeah. Well, at least just being able to make my own games, I think, would be really fun. Even if I don't work in the industry. Okay, so I think that about wraps it up for this one. As always, you can contact us through any of our socials. You can get those on linuxlads.com/contact. We're on Telegram, Twitter, Mastodon, Matrix, etc. You can also email us on show@linuxlads.com. You can... What else can you do? I always forget.
Send a pigeon?
Pigeon, yes.
You can send a pigeon,
We don't have a P.O. box, unfortunately. I know you guys want to send us loads of fan mail and care packages, but sorry.
send your like diamond-encrusted dildos somewhere else, please.
Are you sure? You could take the diamonds off and sell those.
He's got a point. Wow. That went a weird direction.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Let's just gloss over that one.
Yeah. So, yeah. That's about it for this episode. We don't do the thing anymore. The thing that other podcasts do.
You mean the thing that we borrowed from other podcasts that we do?
So, thank you for joining us. I've been Shane, and I've been joined by Mike, Connor, and Amalith. Thanks, everyone, for joining.
Oh, my website is secluded.site. And all my socials and everything are at the bottom of there.
See ya.
Adios.
Goodbye.